The following is a presentation of Remnant. Light of the
world. Hey, this is Jeremiah from Remnant Church. Thanks for listening to us online. You know, we want you to be encouraged and filled with hope through your experience as you listen in. This life can be complicated, even confusing, but it's our hope that you catch a glimpse of God's unconditional love for you and His purpose for your life. Thanks for listening in.
You're listening to a message from Pastor Jeremiah Vick.
This morning, my first hero that I had picked, at first I thought I had maybe selfishly picked this person, and someone had actually mentioned this hero, and so I'm like, oh, that'd be great, I want to talk about this person. And obviously it was God, because after I wrestled with all the other ideas that I had, God brought me back to this one man that I want to talk to you guys about this morning. So, and the reason I'm excited about this is because every single one of us, we all struggle with fears and doubts. So am I the only one? I want to make sure that everybody's on the same page. Do we all struggle with fears and with doubts? Okay, so you're in good company today, because we're going to talk about a hero that really struggled with some things. He just wasn't sure of himself. And there's several heroes in the Bible that kind of started out that way, but their confidence kind of picked up. And this guy just, man, the closer it came to doing what God had called him to do, he just needed more and more proof that he was doing this on God's behalf and that God was really going to have his back. Have you ever felt that way, where you're just not sure and maybe you're holding back? Maybe you're just filled with doubt and fear, and so it's keeping you from doing the things that you know that you should be doing. Are you with me? Have you been there before? Okay, I've been there lots of times. Had some fears and some doubts when it comes to deciding what career to choose. I remember my freshman year of college. You know, you change your major, I think, like 7 times your freshman year. And so I had decided, you know, I'm going to be a Bible major and I'm going to have a youth ministries minor. I am not going to change my mind, and no one can talk me out of it. And then about 3 weeks into my freshman year, my Greek teacher pulled me aside and said, hey, you should really think about minoring in Greek. And I'm like, really? What would be the reason for that? You know, because I was already a little concerned about taking Greek in the first place. I knew it was a hard class. And he said, yeah, your understanding of the Bible will grow so much deeper. You'll just have a much better sense of what the scripture is saying if you minor in Greek. Or if you major in Greek. And I'm like, I'm not definitely not majoring in Greek, because I don't want to be studying languages this whole time that I'm here. But I was a Bible major, and I thought, okay, well, maybe I'll do that. And I was probably about, I don't know, a month and a half into the semester, and I went to my dorm, and I just started hitting my head on the wall. Why did I choose to take so much Greek? I mean, I was already hating Greek, and I was only a little ways into it, and I realized I had, you know, 4 years of Greek classes scattered throughout. But actually, as time went on, I grew to love it. But I kind of struggled with that, because for one thing, I knew it was a difficult class. And my goal was to make straight A's. I made straight A's in high school, and my goal was to make straight A's in college. And so I got my first B in college on a test. Don't get decided here. It was on a test, not the actual grade, okay? And it was in English. And I get this, and I went back to my dorm and I cried. Cried myself to sleep. No, I wasn't. It wasn't that upsetting. But reality set in, and I was like, hey, wait a second. This is actually going to be a little harder than I thought it was going to be. And so I approached it with kind of this little bit of doubtfulness and fear. And maybe you've kind of had a similar experience, and maybe it wasn't a class or an adventure that you were embarking on, but maybe it was a huge decision that you had to make, and you were like, I don't know if I can go through with this. I feel like I'm kind of all alone in this, and I just don't know if I want to move forward. And that fear sometimes can really hold us back. So this morning I'm going to be talking about Gideon, and the title of my message is Give Me Proof. And so let's put our timeline up there so you guys can get an idea of where Gideon's life falls into this history. So we've got all these patriarchs. We call them patriarchs. I'm not really sure exactly why, because they were the forefathers of our faith. Maybe that's it. So you've got these patriarchs: Adam and Eve, Noah, Abraham, Jacob, Moses, Joshua. You have all these great guys. And then you have this period of time. And if you remember a couple weeks ago when I spoke, I talked about Joshua and how God had commissioned Joshua to take the people of Israel into the promised land. So it was a big deal. These guys are going from wandering in the desert for 40 years and then another 40 added onto that. And so they're wandering all this time and they finally get to enter into the place that God's promised them. And what do? You think they would be grateful and excited and thankful for God, but instead they began to adopt the customs and the idol worship of the people that already lived in that land. And so you have this period of time we refer to as the judges, the time of the judges, where from time to time God would appoint certain men to lead Israel and to bring them kind of back on the right path. So it was like this crazy roller coaster period of time for the people of Israel. So the nation goes from being saying, God, you're number one, to saying, oh, this other God, I think we're going to try him for a little while. And then God would raise up a judge, and that judge would say, no, you're doing the wrong thing. God says to honor him only. And so it's just this roller coaster relationship that the nation of Israel had with God. And so we come across this guy named Gideon, and it was right smack in the middle of one of those low times, those low points in Israel's history. As a matter of fact, they were not only having a low time as far as who they were worshiping, but, I mean, they were just having a miserable, horrible time. Let me read it for you so you kind of get a sense of what it was like. So we're going to be in Judges chapter 6, and I encourage you, if you have a pen, I encourage you to write stuff down because God has some good stuff for you this morning. Judges chapter 6, we'll be reading verses 1 through 12 to start us out. It says, the Israelites did evil in the Lord's sight. So the Lord handed them over to the Midianites for 7 years. The Midianites were so cruel that the Israelites made hiding places for themselves in the mountains, caves, and strongholds. Whenever the Israelites planted their crops, marauders from Midian, Amalek, and the people of the east would attack Israel, camping in the land and destroying crops as far away as Gaza. They left the Israelites with nothing to eat, taking all the sheep, goats, cattle, and donkeys. These enemy hordes, coming with their livestock and tents, were as thick as locusts. They arrived on droves of camels, too numerous to count, and they stayed until the land was stripped bare. So Israel was reduced to starvation by the Midianites. Then the Israelites cried out to the Lord for help. I'm going to stop right there for a second because life is pretty bad if you're in Canaan as an Israelite right now. I mean, these guys are beat down. I mean, not only are they experiencing this oppression, but I mean, they're starving. They can't even prepare. They can't even grow crops and have food. They can't produce what they need to survive because these guys keep coming in and stealing everything they have that's good. If it's not bolted down, they steal it. It's kind of like what's been happening at Youth for Christ the last couple months. We've had two break-ins. One, I guess you can't really call the stealing the air conditioners a break-in, but it qualifies as a major loss for us. But, I mean, I can't imagine to not even be able to go outside and wonder. I mean, put it in modern times. Imagine having to look out your window to make sure your car is still there. You're like checking all the cars still there. Okay, good. I mean, that's what it was like for these guys. They were having things stolen from them constantly, and life was pretty bad. And then they cried out to the Lord. Why is it that life has to get that bad for us? Why is it that things have to just get completely miserable? I mean, it's like God has become our last resort instead of our first resort. We do it. I mean, we point fingers at the Israelites and we're like, shame on you for doing that. But we do the same thing in our lives. We wait until that point where things are just depressing, where things have just gotten to where we're just like, it can't get any worse. And then we're like, wait a second, I should call on God. And that's what the Israelites did. Things got bad and they were like, we have no other choice. Can you imagine how God is performing all these miracles for his people and preserving them as a nation and taking them out of oppression after oppression and putting them back on a solid place. And every single time God does that, these guys just kind of turn their back on him and do their own thing. And then they get in trouble. What do? They call out for help. They call out for God. When they cried out to the Lord because of Midian, listen to verse 7, the Lord sent a prophet to the Israelites. He said, this is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. I brought you up out of slavery in Egypt. I rescued you from the Egyptians and from all who oppressed you. I drove out your enemies. I gave you their land. I told you, I am the Lord your God. You must not worship the God of the Amorites in whose land you live. But you have not listened to me. Then the angel of the Lord came and sat beneath the great tree of Ophrah, not Oprah, which belonged to Joash of the clan of Ebiezer. Gideon, son of Joash, was threshing wheat at the bottom of a winepress to hide the grain from the Midianites. The angel of the Lord appeared to him and said, "Mighty hero, the Lord is with you." Okay, now I want you to understand the irony of this situation, because Gideon is this dude who's just trying to make it. He's just trying to squeak by. And look at where God invades his life. What is he doing? He's threshing wheat in the bottom of a wine press. That's not what that is designed for. When you thresh wheat, you want to be up somewhere where the wind can take the chaff of the wheat and blow it away so that you have all the good stuff, right? I mean, that's the process of threshing wheat. But here this guy is hiding out in a hole in the ground because he's so afraid that they're going to steal his wheat. I mean, this is his life. It's not just like he decided one day, oh, this would be a good way to thresh wheat. No, I mean, this is his life. He was hiding out. And his whole family, they were spending their lives hiding and trying to protect and trying to keep and hold on to the things that they had. And this is where God finds Gideon, in a place where he is just full of doubt and full of fear. And then, how does he address him? How does he address Gideon? He says, "Mighty hero." Can you imagine? I mean, I don't know. Maybe Gideon was alone in the place right there where he was threshing wheat. Maybe he had a couple of guys helping him. But if he would have said that to me and I was Gideon, I would have been looking around to see who he was talking about. Like, me? Mighty hero? What are you talking about? You see what I'm doing here? I'm hiding out from my enemies. I mean, I'm in serious trouble here. And so this is how God approaches Gideon. But notice what he says. He says, "The Lord is with you. The Lord is with you." And so here's the first thing that I want you to take with you, and you can write this down. God is with you in the struggle. God is with you in the struggle. Because here's the thing, I'm pretty sure, and we're going to find out a little bit later as Gideon replies to God, I'm pretty sure that this guy was thinking that God had forgotten all about him. And for God to appear to him and remind him, "Hey, I'm with you. Hey, you don't have to be this dude that hides out in secret and tries to live your life behind closed doors where no one can find you and hurt you." He says, "No, you're a mighty hero. And the thing that makes you mighty is the fact that the Lord is with you." I love how it reminds us of this in Hebrews. Hebrews 13:5, it says, "God has said, I will never fail you. I will never abandon you." And this is a theme throughout the scriptures. God constantly is reminding his people, and he's reminding you today, that I am with you. I will never fail you. I will never abandon you. And I say to you, don't allow your circumstance to be evidence of God's absence. Instead, let his promise be the proof of his presence. So don't let your circumstance that you're in right now be evidence that God is absent in your life. But instead, hold on to his promises that are proof of his presence. Because the truth is, you can rely on God and you can rely on his truth and on his promises way more than you can rely on the circumstances that you see around you. And there may be chaos swirling around you. Your life right now, you may be like, "You know what? It's really hard to see God in this because you don't know the situation that I'm in." And the truth is, I don't have to know the situation that you're in order to know that God is with you, because I know his promise. And I also know that God is a promise keeper. He's a covenant-keeping God, a God who never breaks his word. And when he says, "I will never fail you, I will never leave you, I will never abandon you," you can hold to that promise. And so you may not be able to see God at the time, especially if you're at the bottom of that wine press, just trying to get by. But the truth is that God is with you, and he's never going to leave you. Look at Gideon's reply, Judges 6, verses 13 and 14. "Sir," Gideon replied, "if the Lord is with us, why has all this happened to us? And where are the miracles our ancestors told us about? Didn't they say the Lord brought us up out of Egypt? But now the Lord has abandoned us and handed us over to the Midianites." So Gideon's saying, "You know what? I didn't see these miracles. I wasn't around when God did all these great things. Like, what about those times? What about those times where God was in the business of saving people and rescuing people? What happened to that God?" Then the Lord turned to him and said, Go with the strength you have and rescue Israel from the Midianites. I am sending you. I am sending you. So Gideon, right up front, expresses all of his fears. And he says, I don't see God in this. I've heard stories. I've heard rumors about him. I've seen him working in other people's lives. I've seen him repair other people's marriages. I've seen him heal other people. But I don't see him working in my life. I haven't experienced it for myself firsthand. And God's answer to Gideon is, I want you to rise above your fears. And that's the next thing I want you to write down. God is calling you to rise above your fears. To rise above your fears. See, if you were to ask Gideon at this point in his life, Gideon, are you a hero that people can look up to? I'm pretty sure that Gideon would say no. No one's going to look up to me. As a matter of fact, a little bit later in this passage, Gideon begins to express all the reasons that no one would look up to him. And maybe you feel the same way. Maybe you feel like in your circumstance, the fears that you're facing, the challenges that you're facing, maybe it's just hard for you to even get up in the morning because you know what a miserable day you're going to have. I don't know what your situation is, but I do know this. I know that God is calling you to rise above your fears. Look what it says in 2 Timothy 1, verse 7. It says, for God has not given us a spirit of fear and timidity, but of power, love, and self-discipline. Of power, love, and self-discipline. So God is saying, I want to replace the fear that you're feeling, those feelings of doubt that you have, I want to replace that with my power, with my love. And I want you to be able to conform yourself to me and have that discipline, that self-discipline. That's the life that I've created you for. I haven't created you for a life of fear. I haven't created you for a life of hiding out in secret places and hoping that no one comes and destroys your stuff. You know, my son Josiah, whenever he wants to play in his room and invites me to come and play something with him, there's always this building process, okay? Where we take the blocks and we just start stacking them up and we build things. Sometimes he actually will draw me like a schematic and he'll come in and be like, Dad, we need to build this. See, there's a tower right here. There's a thing that comes up right here and it's like 1,738,000 feet high. You know, he always has these huge numbers. To him, there's no limit, right? So I'm looking at him like, yeah, that's not possible according to physics, but we'll give it a try. So we'll go into his room and we'll start building something and we get it built just exactly the way he has it on his schematic. And then you know what he does? Knocks it down. That's like the best part, right? Well, the other day he had built something in his room. He actually had come to me and said, Dad, I need you to build this. And he showed me the tower, the impossible tower. I'm like, okay, we can do that. I'm like, I'll be in there in a little bit. So he went into his room and he started doing it on his own. And by the time I went into the room, he had actually had built this thing. And he had like put every block on top of each other and it actually built the thing. And I'm looking at the drawing and I'm like, wow, you built what you drew here. That's pretty cool. And I'm expecting him to say, yeah, let's knock it down. And he's like, yeah, Dad, we're not knocking this one down. This one's staying up there. I'm like, I know why that one's staying up there. You put the blood, sweat, and tears into that bad boy. But here's the thing. We put all this energy and all this effort into our lives, and we build something, and the last thing we want to do or want to see happen is it fall to the ground. We don't want to see that. But what happens when that does happen? And we're just sitting there amongst the rubble. What happens in those places? God is calling us to rise above our fears, to rise above those things that are challenging us. See, here's the thing. Your fear will not only control you, but also it will cause you to miss God's plan for your life. So your fear is not only going to be this all-consuming emotion in your life, but it's also going to cause you to miss out on what God has for you. And let me just say this. If I was reading the book of Judges and I come to this part about Gideon, and God comes to Gideon and says, mighty hero, I'm going to use you to save your people. And Gideon's like, no, I'm pretty happy with what I've got here. I'm just going to hide out here. And imagine if the story ended right there. What would that be like? But for many of us, the story ends right there. We don't go on to see what God has for us. We allow our fears to consume us. And then we totally miss out on God's plan for our lives, on what God really has laid out for us. We don't get to see the great adventure. We don't get to see this epic journey that God has prepared for us because we're too afraid. God's calling us to rise above our fears. So Gideon, when he considers this, he says to himself or to God, I'm going to need some proof. Look at verse 15 and 16. But Lord, Gideon replied, how can I rescue Israel? My clan is the weakest in the whole tribe of Manasseh. And I am the least in my entire family. So he's like, God, I don't think you know who you're talking to. This is Gideon. I'm from that family that, no, you don't even want to know my family. We're going to end up in like that Walmart, you know, people of Walmart website or something. I mean, God, I don't think, you have not seen my relatives. I don't even want to go to their house for Christmas. And he says, and look at me. He's like, I'm like the worst one. I'm the scrawniest one. I'm the weakest one out of my entire family. I have nothing. We got nothing here, God. The Lord said to him, I will be with you, and you will destroy the Midianites as if you were fighting against one man. And I'm pretty sure Gideon was like, I think I could take one dude. Yeah, I think I could handle that. But look what he says. If you were truly going to help me, show me a sign to prove that it is really the Lord speaking to me. Maybe he wasn't convinced that he was awake or I don't know, but he's like, show me a sign. I need proof that it's really you. And he says to him, don't go away until I come back and bring my offering to you. And he answered, I will stay here until you return. I will stay here. So we have Gideon saying, God, here's all the reasons why it can't be me. But I'll tell you what, if it's really you and if you're the one that really wants, I'm going to need just a little extra proof. I've still got some doubt here. I need some proof. And here's the thing that I want you to take with you this morning. You can write this down. God understands our doubts. God understands our doubts. I mean, he tells Gideon, okay, you need proof? Fine. I'm going to kick back here until you get back and bring me your offering. I'll stay here. I'm not going to go anywhere. And Gideon's like, okay, I'm out of here. I'll be back. God understands our doubts. Sometimes we think that God's ashamed of us because we doubt. Sometimes we feel that God looks down on us because our faith isn't strong enough. And it really, it feels impossible to have the kind of faith that God wants us to have. And so when those doubts start to creep in, it really kind of brings us down even more because we're like, wow, I really can't measure up. I mean, God's just asking me to have a little bit of faith and I can't even have a little bit. And so we begin to feel like we can't even meet God's minimum requirements of faith. And I'm here to tell you, God understands your doubts. He understands that. It tells us this in Hebrews 4, verse 15, just talking about Jesus. It says, this high priest of ours understands our weaknesses, for he faced all the same testings that we do, yet he did not sin. And the word understand here is not just that it makes sense to him. No, it's that he empathizes with it. He doesn't just understand what you're going through. He feels what you're going through. God understands our doubts. And I believe that's why when Gideon said, I need a little bit of proof, God said, okay, I can give you some proof. Because he understood what Gideon was facing. He understood the fear that he was being challenged with. God understands our doubts. And that's why I say it's okay to have doubts. God gets that. But don't allow these doubts to overwhelm you. If you have doubts, that's okay. And we all have doubts. There's nothing wrong with that. But when you allow those doubts to suppress in your life what God wants to do, that's when you get yourself into trouble. When you allow those doubts to take over your life and you begin to live your life according to your doubts instead of according to God's promises, that's where things go wrong. That's where we start making some major mistakes. So God, when Gideon comes back and God's still there waiting for him, God says, okay, Gideon, I've given you this first bit of proof. He's like, now I want to give you my first assignment for you. I'm going to give you the first assignment. He says this in verse 25. Pull down your father's altar to Baal. Cut down the Asherah pole standing beside it. Then build an altar to the Lord your God here on this hilltop sanctuary. So Gideon took of his servants and did as the Lord had commanded. But he did it at night because he was afraid of the other members of his father's household and the people of the town. Okay, so I want you to understand what's going on here. So God tells Gideon, here's your first assignment. Now, understand that when God says, I'm calling you, Gideon, to rescue, to save your people from the Midianites, Gideon has in his mind, wow, I've got to be this mighty warrior because these guys come through and they just knock us out. These guys come through and we can't stand up to their weapons. We can't stand up to their brute force, to their numbers. And Gideon's like, God, you're going to have to really make me into this crazy, mighty, mad hero in order for me to be able to do this. And God gives him his first assignment. And his first assignment is, hey, your dad has set up an altar to Baal. And I need you to get rid of that. So his first assignment is, you, Gideon, have inherited some idolatry. And here's the thing, for each one of us, I would dare say every single one of us in the room have inherited idolatry in our lives. There is something that's been passed down to us from our father or from our mother or from our grandparents. Something's been passed down to us, and it's like this cycle that our family's stuck in and we can't break out of it. It's inherited idolatry. And your first assignment from God, if you're going to be the hero that God's called you to be, your first assignment is to tear down that idol. Because how are you going to fight a battle out there if you're losing the battle at home? So God tells Gideon, I want you to go to your dad's idol and I want you to destroy that altar and that Asherah pole. Okay, so an Asherah pole, let me just explain what's going on here. The Asherah pole is an idol that's dedicated to the goddess of fertility. Okay, so the goddess Asherah. So they have these, it's kind of like a totem pole. I have a picture for you actually, so you guys can kind of get an idea of what it looks like. Okay, and there's a picture of Gideon. I like his dress, too. It's real nice. So Gideon is going to chop down the Asherah, okay, which is that like that totem pole that they would dedicate. So every time you would see an altar to Baal, you would also see this idol to the goddess of fertility. And God called Gideon to tear it. Only it wasn't exactly like this because it was at night. Remember what he said? He said he went during at night because he didn't want people to know. Gideon's fears are still very much a part of his life. Even though he's responding to what God wants him to do, his fear is still very much a part of his life. And so he goes to do it at nighttime. So darken it up a little bit for us, Randy. That's probably a little more what it was like. But he can't see what he's doing, so give him a little bit of light here. So there we go. All right. Now he can see. Okay, so, I mean, he goes at nighttime because he doesn't want anybody to know what he's up to. And I'm not going to read the story for you, but what happens is the very next day, it's pretty obvious that someone did that. And I have a feeling that Gideon left something behind because right away the people were like, it was Gideon. I was like, you know, it's almost like when you do something wrong and your mom's just like, yeah, it was you. They know every single time. Moms just have like this, you know, I don't know what it is, this instinct that they automatically are able to assign blame and they're pretty accurate most of the time. As a matter of fact, every once in a while, I would get in trouble for something that I didn't do. So my dad would spank me and I would be like, oh, I'm innocent. I didn't do that. Why am I getting punished? And my dad would be like, but you did do something that you got away with, right? Yes. Beat me. No. So Gideon's guilty, right? And so these people, actually, they got mad at him. It's his family and their friends and they get mad at Gideon. And Gideon's dad stops everybody. He's like, you know what? Gideon tore down Baal's altar, let Baal defend himself. And that stopped the riot. Nothing happened from there. But the truth is, here's Gideon, his first assignment from God, the first thing right out of the gate that God asked him to do is to go to his own home and clean up the mess there. And let me just say to you, before you start looking at this lofty plan that God has for you, before you start looking down the road at this battle that God has in store for you, this challenge that God's going to allow you to overcome, keep in mind that God would rather that you begin this journey with him by going home and cleaning up what's there. Get rid of that inherited idolatry. Whatever it is that's dishonoring God in your own home, in your own life. It may be that something has stuck around for a long time and you just can't get rid of it. It's just been a part of your family history. Guess what? God's telling you to break that. Break that cycle. Get rid of it. Take care of it. That's Gideon's first assignment. So now God's giving Gideon the big assignment to take down the Midianite army. Judges 6, verse 36. But Gideon needs a little more proof. Then Gideon said to God, if you are truly going to use me to rescue Israel as you promised? Prove it to me in this way. I will put a wool fleece on the threshing floor tonight. If the fleece is wet with the dew in the morning, but the ground is dry, then I will know you are going to help me rescue Israel as you promised. Okay, I kind of think that Gideon maybe just came up with this one just on the fly. You know, it's like, I don't know. I would have been like, make fireworks appear in the sky, you know, like something like that. But Gideon's like, let's see. Oh, I've got this piece of cloth. Yeah. Okay, so I'm going to put this on the ground. And if it's wet in the morning and everything else is dry, then that's going to be proof. So God's like, okay, you need a little bit of proof? You need a boost? Sure. Here you go. And that is what happened. Verse 38. When Gideon got up early the next morning, it's probably daylight savings time, I imagine, he squeezed the fleece and wrung out a whole bowl full of water. Gideon's like, whoa, yeah, that worked. But then he's like, oh, that's too easy. Wait a second here. So then Gideon said to God, God, please don't be angry with me, but let me make one more request. Let me use the fleece for one more test. This time let the fleece remain dry while the ground around it is wet with dew. So that night, God did as Gideon asked. The fleece was dry in the morning, but the ground was covered with dew. Okay, so I've asked myself 100 times, if I've asked myself once, why is this part of the story in the Bible? I mean, I'm thinking to myself, what can we learn from this? I mean, here's Gideon. He's just got these doubts, and he needs proof from God. And he's just like, God, I'll do this, but I need you to show up a little bit before I go, and I just want to see that you really are sending me. And then God does it for him. Bam. And then he's like, that was good, God. Good sign. Thanks. But I don't know. I need something else. If you could just, you know, I want to really know that was you and that it wasn't just my imagination. So can you do this? And why does God concede every time to do what Gideon asked him to do? I believe this is why. I believe that God allows space for our doubts because they don't make him any less God. Our doubts don't make God any less who he is. And I believe that's why God makes space for the doubts that we have in our lives. Because he knows that we're human. He knows that we're going to have these doubts. And he knows that if we doubt, it doesn't make him any less who he says he is. It doesn't make God any less faithful. It doesn't change the stories of the miracles that God performed. It doesn't change the track record of God and all the amazing things that he did and the way that God showed up and the way that God proved himself over and over again and was faithful to his people. It doesn't change any of that when we doubt. And why am I telling you this? Because it's not like I want a room full of doubters, right? Like, hey, you know, we should all go out and doubt a little bit more. You know, we've been talking about how you need to strengthen your faith. Well, now let's strengthen our doubting, right? That's not what we're talking about here. But we are talking about how God allows room for that. Because sometimes we think our doubt disqualifies us from being who God wants us to be. Sometimes we think that our doubts in some way eliminate us from this beautiful plan God has for us. And I think the story of Gideon tells us something very different. I think that God says, you know what? I understand your doubts. I see your doubt, and I'll raise you a little bit of proof, right? That's the God that we serve. So look what happens, Judges 7, looking at verse 2. The Lord said to Gideon, oh, by the way, Gideon sends out an email. No, Gideon text messages all his friends. No. Gideon blows a horn. Can you believe this? I'm like, man, this is how these people communicate back then? Yeah. Apparently they have like some secret sign, right? So he goes out and he blows the horn and signals to everybody else to rally together. And I mean, he literally brings together like 30,000 people. Can you imagine that? I mean, I'm happy when I get all my staff in one meeting. This guy like blows a horn and like 30,000 people are like, okay, Gideon, what do you need? So they all gather together. They're ready to do this thing. The Lord said to Gideon, you have too many warriors with you. If I let all of you fight the Midianites, the Israelites will boast to me that they saved themselves by their own strength. That makes sense. They're pretty good at boasting and screwing everything else up. Therefore, tell the people, whoever is timid or afraid may leave this mountain and go home. So he says, okay, I'm glad you got all these guys together, but there's too many of them because you guys are going to look like you did this all on your own. So go out there and say, if anybody's a little bit scared or hungry or what, have something else, something good on TV or whatever, go ahead and go home. And what happens? 22,000 of them went home. That's a lot of people. You feel bad when you get stood up. One person stands you up, right? 22,000 people are like, oh, see you later, Gideon. Nice horn, but I'm out of here. And check this out. Only 10,000 are left. But the Lord told Gideon, there's still too many. Bring them down to the spring and I'll test them to determine who will go with you and who will not. Then Gideon took his warriors down to the water. The Lord told him, divide the men into two groups. And one group put all those who cup water in their hands and lap it up with their tongues like dogs. And in the other group, isn't that how all men drink? I don't know. In the other group, put all those who kneel down and drink with their mouths in the stream. Okay? Only 300 of the men drank from their hands, and all the others got down on their knees and drank with their mouths in the stream. The Lord told Gideon, with these 300 men, I will rescue you and give you victory over the Midianites. Send all the others home. I mean, this just keeps getting scarier and scarier, right? I mean, first he sends home all the people that don't want to be there. Then he takes the people that are like, yeah, we want to do this. Let's do this. And there's a lot of them, right? And then he does this little, like, I don't know, the Pepsi challenge or something. And a bunch of these guys end up failing it. And now he says, all right, now you've got 300 guys who, you know, are too lazy to bend all the way down and take a drink in the stream. And those are the guys that I want you. Someone actually told me once that, well, Gideon, see, God was preparing an army of men that were as mighty as Gideon. And so there was 300 of them that were alert, that drank water like this, where they could look around and see what's going on. I don't know. If that makes you feel better, sure. I don't know. But I think what happened was God was just like, okay, let's figure out another way to whittle this down to this army, just this little army that no one's going to believe in. So, okay, Gideon collected. Okay, the Lord told Gideon in verse 7, with these 300 men, I will rescue you and give you victory over the Midianites. Send all the others home. So Gideon collected the provisions and ram's horns of the other warriors and sent them home. But he kept the 300 men with him. The Midianite camp was in the valley just below Gideon. That night the Lord said, get up, go into the Midianite camp, for I have given you victory over them. Now here's something I want you to understand. I don't want you to miss this, okay? Because this sounds like God is just playing this cruel trick on Gideon, right? I mean, he's already like given him this proof and evidence that it's really him. And then he takes Gideon's army and he just like chops it down to where it's just about nothing. Okay? I mean, Gideon was already having trouble with doubt and fear. So you imagine how this feels to have his army whittled down to these 300 guys. Probably the smartest guys, I'm sure. And so I want you to understand what's happening here. And because maybe in your own life, God has done something similar, or maybe God will do something similar in your life. Because sometimes we feel like we can do it on our own strength. We got 22,000 men, and we think we could take it on. We've got all this talent. We've got all this skill. We've got all these natural qualities about us, and we think we can really do this job that God has called us to do. And here's what I want to say to you. God may take you down a notch when he gives you a victory to remind you, beyond a doubt, that it's all him. And this has happened to me more times than I can possibly count. Where I had things planned out to go a certain way, and God's just like, you know what? That's going to look like Jeremiah did that. Yeah, how about we just mess everything up and make it look like God did it? Yeah. Has he done that to you before? Have you experienced that in your life? Or maybe you're going through that right now. Maybe God is taking you through this refining process where he's cutting away the things that you were proud of, the things that you kind of put all your stakes in. And God's like, no, I want you to trust me, and I don't want you to trust in those things, and so I'm getting rid of those things. And now you're moving forward. It's just me and you. It's just you and God. And that's why I say this last point that I want you to write down. Victory is undoubtedly God's. Undoubtedly God's. Psalmist reminds us of this in Psalms 46, verse 10, where he says, be still and know that I am God. I will be honored. Sometimes God just wants us to recognize who he is, to be reminded of who he is before he gives us a victory. so that we will know beyond a shadow of a doubt that it was him that did it. Ephesians 3:20 says, "Now all glory to God, who is able, through his mighty power at work within us, to accomplish infinitely more than we might ask or think." So God says, I'm going to remove any doubt, because even if you tried to imagine how incredible this victory that I'm going to give you is, God says, I'm going to blow that away. And there's not going to be any doubt in your mind that it was just me and that you had no part in it. So we can look back on that moment in our lives and we can say, God did that. I'm not smart enough to have done that. I'm not talented enough. I don't have what it takes. I don't have that kind of money. It wasn't me. God did that. And this is the truth that God wanted to be a part of Gideon's life. But I tell you what, I love this about God, because God does all this, and then right before he sends Gideon to do this job, he gives him like that one more shot in the arm, that one more boost, that one more thing to encourage him. Look what he does in Judges 7, verse 10. He says, "But if you're afraid to attack, go down to the camp with your servant Purah and listen to what the Midianites are saying, and you'll be greatly encouraged. Then you will be eager to attack." And so if you read the story, what happens is Gideon goes down to the camp. He sneaks down there, okay, unbeknownst to the Midianites that are all settled there in their camp. He sneaks down there. He overhears a conversation. And he hears one guy say to another guy, "I had this dream, okay? I had this dream that this loaf of bread came rolling down the hill and crushed our camp." And then the other guy that's listening to the dream was like, "Dude, you must have been hungry." No. He hears this story, and the other guy's like, "You know what that means? You know what that means? I've heard a rumor that there's this guy, Gideon, the guy that makes bread, right? He's there threshing wheat. I heard that this guy is coming to town, and I also heard that he is going to wipe us out. He's gathered this massive army, and they're going to wipe us out." So Gideon overhears this conversation. He's like, "That's all I need." He runs back up to his camp, to his guys. In verse 15, "When Gideon heard the dream and its interpretation, he bowed and worshiped before the Lord. He returned to the Israelite camp and shouted, 'Get up, for the Lord has given you victory over the Midianite hordes.' He divided the 300 men into three groups and gave each man a ram's horn and a clay jar with a torch in it. And then he said to them, 'Keep your eyes on me. When I come to the edge of the camp, do just as I do. And as soon as I and those with me blow the ram's horns, blow your horns too all around the entire camp and shout for the Lord and for Gideon.' It was just after midnight, after the changing of the guard, when Gideon and the 100 men with him reached the edge of the Midianite camp. Suddenly they blew the ram's horns and broke their clay jars. Then all three groups blew their horns and broke their jars. They held their blazing torches in their left hands and the horns in their right hands, and they all shouted. Each man stood at his position around the camp and watched as all the Midianites rushed around in panic, shouting as they ran to escape. When the 300 Israelites blew the ram's horns, the Lord caused the warriors in the camp to fight against each other with their swords." So what happens? Gideon's only got 300 guys, right? And I don't know if God told him to do this. I think Gideon just came up with this crazy scheme. I think Gideon's just like, "Let's just get crazy and light up these torches and try to freak them out." You know, he came up with this idea. And God gives them victory. What happens? The Midianites actually start attacking each other. They start fighting each other. They kill each other off. And so here's this mighty army, this huge army that God had assembled, or that Gideon had assembled. God whittles it down to 300 people. They go to fight the Midianites, and they don't even get to use their swords. They're just like, "What happened? We didn't even get to fight. Oh, my sword doesn't have blood on it." And they're stabbing each other. And put a little bit of blood on it or something to make it look good, right? God gave them this incredible victory and they didn't have to even fight. Isn't it incredible when God shows up? Which tells me this: despite our doubts and weaknesses, God always comes through. God always comes through. It doesn't matter what kind of doubt or what kind of fears you're possessed with, God still comes through. If you obey him, if you respond to him when he calls you, and you say, "Yeah, I'm going to do that." I believe that if God had told Gideon, "Go cut down that altar and that Asherah pole that belongs to your dad, get rid of that trash." And I think if Gideon would have told God, "You know what? That's my family's stuff. I don't think I should touch it. I don't think I should mess with family. You know, that's blood. You know, I'm not messing with blood," right? Imagine that. Imagine what would have happened. God would have probably said, "You know what, Gideon? Yeah, I think you're right. I think I have the wrong person. Let me find someone else who's willing to do this. The thing is, no matter what your fear that you're facing, no matter what your doubt is that you have, God always comes through. God always comes through, regardless of our weakness. And when I say regardless of our weakness or in spite of our weakness, I say God actually even uses our weakness. I love this passage. Oh, 2 Corinthians 12, 9 through 10. God said, "My grace is all you need. My power works best in weakness. So now I'm glad to boast about my weakness." This is Paul talking. "So now I'm glad to boast about my weaknesses so that the power of Christ can work through me. For when I am weak, then I am strong." And I believe that this is something that we can all say, because admittedly, we are all weak. We all have doubts. We all have fears. And if we can say that it's the power of Christ working in me that enables me to do anything that God's called me to do, I think that we'll be saying exactly what Gideon lived out in this story. Because from the get-go, Gideon was not a champion. He was just some dude hiding out full of fear. But God said, "I want you to rise above that fear. I'm calling you out. I'm calling you to do something big for me." Gideon said, "I have doubts, God. I have fears." God says, "That's okay. I can still work, regardless of your fears, regardless of your weaknesses. I can still use you to do something great." And I believe God is telling each one of you the same thing. I don't know what fear it is. I don't know what doubt it is that's holding you back from giving God 100% of your life. But whatever it is, it's not worth holding on to when you think about what it is that you're missing out on. God is inviting you into this incredible plan for your life. God is asking you to rise above your fears and your doubts. And he's not saying you can't have doubts and you can't have fears. He's saying, "I want to use you in spite of your fears and your weaknesses." As a matter of fact, people are going to look at you and they're going to say, "You know what? How does he do that? How can she do that? I mean, they got nothing. How can they do that?" And God's going to say, "It's because of me." It's because despite their situation, despite whatever fear is challenging them, despite whatever doubt they're facing, I can still do something incredible in their lives. And I believe that promise is for us today. Would you bow your heads with me this morning as we get ready just to sing this last song together?
Light of the world. You've been listening to a presentation of Remnant. For more information, visit us at remnantchurchonline.com. You